the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Adam McGuire is with us to talk to us about his book, The Bailout Babies, How Ireland's Financial Crash Reshaped the Next Generation and What It Means for the Future. Adam, welcome back to The Last Word. It's been many years since you used to be on with us regularly.
It's been a while. Great to be back.
Now, tell us a little bit about who the bailout babies are. What generation are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the people who were born during the Celtic Tiger, essentially. So anyone born kind of early 90s through all the way really up to 2007, 2008. And they're now young adults. They're 18 all the way up into their 30s now. Very much the people who are at the coalface in terms of the housing crisis and the implications of that, which, of course, the seeds of which were formed back in the crash and the bailout, and they're reaping the rewards of that time.
You're slightly older than that. So
slightly
what
older
drew
than that,
you
yeah.
to writing about this generation?
Well, I was writing a lot about kind of trends in terms of what younger people and younger adults, how they're spending their money, how they're living their lives. And it kind of got me thinking about the fact that, but when you don't have a house and you've no prospect of a house, it does affect everything that you do. And as I sat down and kind of plotted that out, you realise, you know, these people aren't just sitting in their parents' box room waiting for the day that they can finally scrape together a deposit. They're out working good jobs. They're living their lives. They're trying to you know, keep themselves going, really, mentally as much as anything else. But it just affects everything. It affects, you know, the way they spend their money on a day-to-day basis, all the way through to their prospects for being able to start a family and what their long-term kind of career goals are. It just really impacts everything in them.
Yeah, how frustrated are they, especially when they get people telling them to stop eating their avocado toast and drinking their chai lattes and to save for a deposit and then they'll get a house?
Yeah, I mean, it's a standard refrain. And I think there is a lot of frustration there and a lot of kind of eye-rolling and resignation in the people I spoke to, because they know that you know, they are saving hard, they're working hard, and in many ways they're sacrificing in ways that previous generations, including my own, didn't really have to. You know, everybody had to work hard, and you should have to work hard to be able to get a deposit for a house together. But at the same time, you shouldn't have to give up your 20s and not live a life at all in order to do that. And yeah, I think that there is a bit of frustration with that characteristic, that, you know, they're just not trying hard enough, basically, when, you know, the data shows that they're actually more prudent than older people are. They're more inclined to save money when they get it. They're you know, bargain hunters. They're foregoing the likes of, you know, nights out and weekends away, which would have been kind of the standard par for the course at that age. And despite that, they just don't feel like getting a house is a realistic prospect for them in the near future.
And tell us about things like the little treat culture.
Yeah, so this is this is kind of where the book really started from. It's this idea that younger adults are treating themselves on a regular basis. It's kind of part of their day-to-day kind of contract with themselves. So they're buying a fancy coffee, they're buying a little cake when they're having their lunch or whatever it might be. And they're doing that as a way to kind of get through the day, because you know, they're working in a job maybe that isn't the most fulfilling, or they feel like, I'm working hard and I'm not getting anywhere for it. So this is their way of just kind of keeping their heads above water. And I think people will listen to that and go, well, that should be the money they're putting away and saving. But when you think about it, if, you know, the young people aren't going out to the pub on a regular basis like they used to be, and if you think about the money you would spend on a Saturday night versus, you know, €5 for a coffee 5 days a week, they're actually spending a lot less money on themselves. They're just doing it in a very different way to previous generations.
Yeah, and has there been some sort of a cultural shift? And something I just observed, and I have 5 of these bailout babies myself and 4 of them are still living at home. But there tends to be a thing about going out maybe on a weekend morning for breakfast,
yeah,
which is an awful lot cheaper than going out for dinner or something on a Saturday night and going for a few pints.
Exactly, yeah. And some people I spoke to would say, like, they'll go out and they'll go for a walk with their friend and have a chat, and then they'll stop off and get a coffee and a cake or something. And that's kind of the thing they look forward to on their weekends, rather than, you know, going out, you know, getting a meal, having a couple of drinks, getting a taxi home, all of which would be very, very expensive. And part of it is kind of, there's a little bit of kind of the Instagramification of their lives as well, that they want something that, you know, they can take pictures of and share with people and, you know, paint a picture of their lives as well. You know, there's only so many times you can take a picture of a pint and put it up on Instagram. So, you know, there's all these aspects to it feeding into this change in the way they're living their lives. And it's a simple fact that they're now doing this on a kind of daily basis. It's part of the terms and conditions of their day. rather than being, I'll deny myself all week and then, you know, have a blowout on the weekend instead.
From all the interviews that you conducted for this book, what did you come across with people who were children when the crash happened, but who might have been aware of the stress that their parents were suddenly coming under about paying the mortgage or being able to continue the lifestyle that they had been leading for maybe the previous decade?
Yeah, there were a few examples of that. One that springs to mind is a couple I spoke to about. I was looking at this phenomenon of the kidult, which is, you know, the adult who is, you know, buying and engaging in what would have previously considered kind of kiddish activities, buying, you know, toys or going to Disneyland, for example. And there's a couple, Kim and Dave, that I spoke to, who are regular visitors to Disneyland. They don't have any kids themselves, but they're just, you know, really lovers of Disney and Disneyland. And Kim was saying to me, it started for her as a child. She went to Disneyland a couple of times as a young child, and then suddenly they stopped going. And suddenly, you know, things were difficult for them because her father worked in construction. And it went from that thing of, you know, having these fancy holidays to Disneyland to suddenly not having that life and maybe not quite understanding exactly what had happened, but realizing something was changed and there was suddenly, you know, the family had to think about what they were doing and how they were spending their money and the stress that came with that as well. I think it affected this generation, and maybe not even something that they realize or they're fully aware of. That it affected the way they grew up, and it affected the feeling in the household as they grew up as well.
I mentioned frustration earlier. How often does that spill into anger, do you think?
It does from time to time. You know, and there's some, you know, we're talking about the young people who've been affected by the housing crisis. You have to remember as well that, you know, for each of those that are stuck living at home longer than they want to be, you also have the parents who are having to, and, you know, keep their child in their house for longer than they wanted. And, you know, some might like that, some might be happy with that. Others might really wish that they had that spare room to turn into a gym or whatever else they were going to do with it. And it does, you know, that's a frustration on a day-to-day basis. But there are cases where it gets, you know, quite dark, really. And I spoke to someone in Parentline, and they were saying they've seen a significant increase in the number of parents ringing, saying they're having problems with children, adult children living at home, who are, you know, essentially bullying them, being verbally abusive, even physically abusive to them. And, you know, part of that is, and there's no excuse for it, but part of it is that buildup of frustration on both sides, that people just aren't getting what they're working towards. And yet, as I said, it can have some very dark consequences as a result of that.
And also, if you are living at home with your parents or a parent, it can also put a dampener, can't it, on the development of new relationships for yourself. I mean, it's an incredible stat that you have that almost two-thirds of 30 to 34-year-olds now class themselves as single.
Yeah, and that is a CSO stat that's basically unmarried, but it is an increase. We're seeing an increase in that. And yeah, I mean, again, if you think on a practical basis, if you're living at home with your parents way beyond what you would like to be doing, even if they're the most understanding parents in the world, it's going to be very difficult for you to go out and find somebody and you know, go through the process that you would normally do when you're in the early
stages of dating.
The mating rituals, exactly. Yeah, you know, the idea. I was at a dating night called Pitch a Friend, and I spoke to one young guy who again said his parents were really understanding, okay when bringing people home, but he still felt the need to synchronize his steps with his partner as they came up and down the stairs, so that the parents only thought there was one person coming in rather than two. You know, and this idea that, well, do I have to introduce him to my parents on day one rather than allowing me to wait and get to know them a bit before I have to do that? I can't bring them home for a romantic meal when mom and dad are watching Ireland's Fittest Family in the other room. You know, it's not quite the romantic setting that I'd like it to be. And it just is a very real way that you suddenly it'll get in the way of you developing your life. And the irony, of course, is that if you don't have a partner, it's much harder then to be able to buy or rent because you only have one income.
That's exactly what I was just about to get to. I mean, this sort of has a knock-on consequence as such, because we always think about at the moment, or we discuss on radio and newspaper articles, how difficult it is for couples to be able to afford on their income, and then if they have children. But what about single people?
Yeah, like, I mean, it in a lot of ways, and unless they're on extremely good incomes, it's close to impossible. Certainly, if you're going to rent, you're not going to be able to save for a deposit. But even if you're living at home and being able to save as much as possible, it's still extremely difficult. You know, house prices in the year to June, I think it was, are up by 7.5%. So even if you're saving huge amounts of money, House prices are rising at such a rate that you're kind of losing ground on that. And if you only have the one income, it's much, much harder to be able to kind of keep up with that increase. But of course, it's harder to find a partner if you can't go out and date and you can't bring people home and get to know them and get to the point where you say, okay, this is serious, let's try and save for a place of our own.
How many of the people that you spoke to are contemplating or going through with emigration?
A lot. I was kind of surprised with this because when I started out, I thought, well, I'll have to cover emigration. I'll try and find someone who's maybe in the process of planning to emigrate. As it turned out, they were coming from everywhere. Everyone I spoke to, or almost everyone I spoke to, was in some stage of planning. Most of them kind of actively planning towards emigrating. You know, they had friends who were over in Australia and they said they seem to have a good life there and I'm going to follow them in a couple of months' time once I finish my degree or once I finish whatever.
Well, it could be that they have jobs. I come from a generation where many of my classmates, university, whatever, they left the country because there was no prospect of getting a job. Now it's a lot of people have jobs and they're actually giving them up.
Yeah.
Because as far as they're concerned, they don't pay them well enough, or even if they're well paid, it's still not enough to be able to live.
And that's the really interesting thing, that in the last three and a half years, really now, more Irish people have emigrated than immigrated. Usually that's a kind of a phenomenon that we see during recessions and during downturns, that more people will leave than come back. Now we're seeing a small, relatively small number, but I do think it's kind of an omen that we're seeing more Irish people leaving the country than coming back in. And one person I spoke to who is over in Australia, went over there a couple of years ago, again, had a job here, just couldn't make it work in terms of their income, has gone to Australia and said, you know, I don't see any reason why I'd come back, you know. And it's not like things are easy in Australia, and like there's housing shortages over there too, but the lifestyle is better and there's maybe more of a feeling that, okay, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Whereas, you know, some of the people I spoke to here were saying 10, 15 years was a realistic prospect for them to be able to buy a house. You know, the idea of spending that long in that limbo is just too difficult for some.
One final thing, and this is a really unfair question to ask you, Adam, but have you any solutions to this?
I tried to steer clear of solutions. I didn't want it to become a political thing because I think then you just end up getting in the middle of all the mudslinging. The one thing I'd say is that we need to find a solution to this, and I include myself and yourself in this because even those of us who have houses and, you know, have avoided the worst of the housing crisis, we're going to bear the brunt of this down the line because you have this situation where if we have net emigration of you know, talented, bright young people, at the same time, if they're not able to form families, they're not able to have children, you have this, you know, looming, we already know there's a pensions crisis looming, but this massive demographic crisis where you just don't have younger people coming through, you know, earning money, paying taxes, funding our pensions, you know, staffing our nursing homes and hospitals and all that other stuff. And so in 10, 20 years time, you know, everybody is going to suffer as a result of that unless a solution is found. It's not just going to be the bailout babies who are the ones that suffer from the housing crisis.
The Bailout Babies is the book. Adam McGuire, it's a great piece of work. Well done on it.
Thank you very much
for joining us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.